This episode of the Vergecast is brought to you by IBM. 16 million new collar jobs will be created by 2024 to help fill them. IBM's new education model gives high school students workplace experience and an associate's degree. 90 P-Tech schools are already preparing graduates for tomorrow's STEM careers. Let's put smart to work. Find out how at ibm.com/P-Tech. Hello, welcome to the Vergecast, the flagship podcast of Vox Media, a thing that I just keep saying because no one stops me.
Seems true.
It's if I keep saying it, it's true.
You can sell off of that too.
Yeah. Are you an advertiser?
Yeah.
Would you like to be on the flagship? Anyway, I'm Neil Lai. Paul Miller is on vacation this week. He's out, but Jake Astrakis is here.
I have mine melded with Paul and can fully serve his purpose.
You're speaking to him right now.
That's actually terrifying.
This is some Westworld stuff.
Knowing Paul as well as we all do, mind melding with Paul would be a true experience.
Great segment to tell you about later.
Oh, are you doing it?
No.
Well, you just signed up, Mr. Circuit Breaker Editor. You're in it.
I'll figure it out.
Ashley Carmen is here.
Hello.
So it's like a little Circuit Breaker reunion.
The reunion. After we see each other every day.
And Dieter is here.
Can I just say, people ask me if I'm a Westworld fan, and my response is always the same. I watch Westworld.
Yeah.
Westworld is a truly confounding show.
Last season was the same thing. It's just not good.
Okay. No, I'm just going to, I know you're supposed to suspend your disbelief with the show, and this is a spoiler, so if you haven't been watching, just like close your mind. Stop your car and walk away for the next 30 seconds. They're in the cradle, right?
Yeah.
And Ford's like, my brain only works in the cradle, but if I was in the real world, it would decay. And it's like, the fuck? That's not how computers work. Like, my brain can run on this simulation, but if I give myself some robot arms, I'll decay and fall. It's like, that's not how anything works. Okay. Spoiler over.
I can't believe that is your biggest problem.
It's just...
Yeah.
But no, it's the one I can like focus on, right? Like everything else is like a branching. I don't know when anything's happening. That one is just like, if you run the code on this computer, it's fine. But if you run it on that computer, you go crazy.
Yeah,
that
you
makes
have to
no sense.
Burn it with fire.
Yeah,
because that's how you turn computers.
Because that's it's just. Anyway.
There's a whole marzipan metaphor from WWDC that I could make here, but I'm going to let that go.
No, right. Wow. If you run the iOS app on your Mac, it decays, then you have to light your Mac on fire. I'm with you. Let's talk about WWDC. The spoilers are over. I promise there'll be no more Westworld spoilers. Except the hosts are alive. All right. It was WWDC. There's actually a lot going on this week. But the whole show is going to be WWDC. And then whatever other exclusives Dieter got as he roamed the world. A lot. No hardware. The only hardware was new watch bands and cases for the iPhone in what I will say are extraordinarily not good colors. But they're like...
Last year's Pride bands were better than this year's Pride bands by a long shot.
Yeah. The hottest take.
Yeah, they're just like pastels.
Yeah.
Are those hot colors right now?
You know, I'm sure they went to Pantone and were like, what should we do? And Pantone was like, do this. And they were like, okay, I'm sure some moms out there will dig it.
Do you think Johnny Ive has a list of colors and he's like, oh, I'm really scraping the bottom of the barrel?
He only likes space gray. That's it. It's his entire apartment, house, whatever, castle.
Yeah.
Gray.
But that was the only new hardware.
Yeah.
Which is surprising because all the chips in all the computers are extremely old, right?
Yeah. I mean, they're well overdue for an update. That's not... I mean, Apple loves to hang tight and take its time on these things. But last year at WWDC, there was a lot of hardware. So this year, kind of weird.
Yeah.
True developer conference.
True. And Tim Cook came on stage and said, it's all about software. And then we all kind of knew. And then all of our pre-writes about, like, they fixed the keyboard on the MacBook. It was gone.
New iPhone SE.
They aggressively didn't talk about hardware. Like, them not talking about hardware and saying we're not talking about hardware meant that they didn't have to bring up AirPower. They didn't have to bring up the keyboard. Like all the things that people are kind of rah, 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 rah about Apple. Apple at this keynote just refused to address it. It does not live in a world where Siri is bad.
Yeah.
Right? So let's it does start not live in a there. World where people are concerned about that.
So let's start there. So last week on the show, we did our little preview. We're like, they got to talk about Siri. I still don't have a word for this. But I was excited to be disappointed when people cheered for two timers at once. And I was like, that's going to happen. And then people are going to cheer. They didn't do it.
As far as I can
tell, Siri can still not set two timers, which is insanity. But there's a custom macro language that you can use now called Shortcuts. Did you, what's going on there?
Yeah, Shortcuts is basically just the workflow app that Apple acquired, but now it integrates with Siri, which is very, very smart. Because the workflow app, now that it's like a full first-party thing, can do a lot more interesting stuff, and you know it's not going to get as hobbled.
Wait, stop. What is workflow?
As it might have been. Sorry. I'm getting there. Give me a second. It's a way for you to like basically macro things together. It's like Automator, but for the iPhone. So you can tell it to tell me the weather and send a text and turn on maps and give me directions to a thing. And then just say, then you can set a custom keyword to that and in Siri and then go do it. And so they took this very nerdy thing of macros for your iPhone, and then they made it accessible by integrating it as Siri Shortcuts and letting apps say, do you want to make a shortcut for this? And so it gives power users a really cool, deep thing to do. And it gives regular people like better ways to make Siri work. It's also, I think, an end around for the problems with Siri. Like, well, we're not as good as Google at AI stuff and figuring out what you're actually asking for. So instead, what we're going to do is we're going to make you just do it yourself.
Yeah. The human algorithm.
Yeah.
Like, what would you like your phone to do? You can code this yourself. How hard is it to set up these shortcuts? Do you get to play with it at all?
I got to watch a shortcut get set up. They had a food delivery one set up. And basically the app like throws up a like button that says, hey, you just ordered groceries. Do you want to make a shortcut for this? So then you hit the shortcut and then you record a hot word, a keyword for it, and then you're done.
Is like, why do I have to manually activate every single one of these shortcuts? It sounds like they're starting to give third-party access to Siri, but rather than just doing it in like a normal, sensible, logical way, they're like, yeah, what if instead you could customize the command and have to activate every individual one?
So Shortcuts, this is the same day this Vergecast is going up. I'm going to talk about this on the processor episode a little bit. Shortcuts on iOS are analogous to quote-unquote actions and slices on Android P. It's a way to take stuff that you do inside an app and embrace and extend it inside a digital assistant. For real. So instead of like, I need to order a Lyft, go open the Lyft app, find the button, blah, blah, blah. You just ask your assistant to order the Lyft. Now, the way Google does it is the apps basically tell Google, here's everything we can do. Here's literally everything that's possible. And then Google's like, cool. Well, I'm going to figure it out. With Siri, you can tell it, here's everything I can do, but then it's like the short way to do it. And then if you tell Siri to do it, it opens the app and like goes, does a deep link to that thing. Or you can manually code these configuration things. And I think to answer your question, Jake, the reason that they're making users configure it is because they can't actually pull off what Google can pull off and like let the assistant figure it out. And this goes back, I think, to that information story about how there's like real problems with the Siri development team where they like don't actually know what they want to do next.
Yeah.
And it's like not there.
But they hired the guy from Google. Google's ex-head of search to come around. I'm assuming he just got there. So they couldn't at WWDC be like, he'll fix it. They had to like show some things. But it's wild to me that after all of the heat they've taken in the past year for extremely basic things, they didn't deliver any of the basic things, and they delivered a programming language. Right? Like, that's fundamentally what it is. And I'm the sort of person who wants to screw with that. But compared to Alexa or Google Assistant, Apple's answer being, you can code your own hot word that kicks off fundamentally an if this then that recipe. It seems like a different company made that product, right? Like that's like Microsoft's answer to things.
I was so surprised by that and then the whole, what was the other thing they went into that was just workflow? Was that a separate app? Was it the same thing?
No, it's the same app. They took workflow and turned it into shortcuts. In fact, if you are a workflow user, your workflows turn into shortcuts with iOS 12. They port everything over, which is nice. That's nice.
Is this an app that's going to be installed by default in iOS 12?
Like, yeah.
This seems way too complicated for most people.
You can, I think, I could Siri be wrong, but I seem to recall.
Siri Shortcuts is right. But like
Siri Shortcuts is Siri Shortcuts. Workflow is turning into Siri Shortcuts.
So in your
I don't think it's installed by default, but it like all the functionality is there, but you have to like go and install it if you want to do like the crazy complicated macro stuff. I could be wrong about that, but I think I heard somebody say that.
Okay, so developers are into this probably because they want to mess around and be nerdy. But like most people, moms and youths and whatever have probably already gone all in on Alexa, right? Like they're not using HomeKit.
No, I think a lot of people use HomeKit because if you have an iPhone and you have HomeKit stuff, it's just sitting there on the control center.
So you think people are like...
But I think the Home app, there's a split here. So it's very convenient if you have any HomeKit stuff in your house. So I have an August lock, which talks to HomeKit. I can just be like, Siri, lock the door. And it'll just do it. Mm-hmm. And I can push the Home thing on control center. It shows me the thing. I can lock the door there. So like that system integration of HomeKit... Great. You go a little bit farther and you like want to set up a HomeKit scene or like one of these like extended routines, and then you're in hell. And I think, and you're in hell on every platform, but like Apple is like a particular hell. And I think Apple, I hate to anthropomorphize a company, but I'm going to do it. Apple, like it's inherently messy to show the user these things. Mm-hmm. It just is.
Right.
And Apple like hates it. So they don't. Like try.
They have no option.
Right. Right. Like they're just like, fine, this is horrible. You're the asshole who doesn't want to, you know, like Johnny Ive is like, this room is dirty and it will always be dirty and we're never going to clean it up. Just lock the door. Right. And if some idiot wants to go in this dirty room, so be it. And that's like how Apple thinks about like notifications in the Apple Watch. They're all on by default. But if you have a lot of apps to turn them all off, there's you have to just like sit there clicking them all because Apple's like, no one should do this.
And that's changing in iOS 12.
Yeah?
Yeah. So iOS 12 is doing two things to notifications that I'm wildly excited about. The first is they're grouping them both on the phone and on the watch.
Yeah.
So if you've got 50 tweets, you just see the latest one and then you can tap to expand it. And then they're also giving you on that weird slide over where it doesn't actually swipe it away, but it like reveals buttons. Mm-hmm. There's now a button for manage. And then you can, I think the two options they give you are turn off and send a notification center, which I don't love. Apple has this weird distinction between notification center and lock screen. They're like the same thing, but they're not the same thing. But it basically makes your notifications appear silently. They don't buzz your phone, they don't buzz your wrist, but they're like there if you want to go looking for them. Mm-hmm. But the key thing is you can manage a notification right there from the notification instead of having to go dig through it in settings.
Yeah. I was talking about on the watch where when you don't want to send every notification to a watch, there's no button, just turn them all off. You just have to click 1,000 radio buttons. And that to me is evidence that you could build more and more tools to make the inherently messy thing not less messy, but to acknowledge the messiness. Apple rarely builds those tools.
Right.
And I think the Siri shortcut thing, like that to me, when we were live logging it, I was like, this is going to be a mess. Like, because workflow is good, but the second you get into that branching complexity, like that's not where Apple shines. Apple shines at like
no one wants to do
hiding
that.
The branching complexity from you.
No regular person wants to do that, I don't think.
I just can't imagine that the answer to the regular person's problems with Siri is like write a macro. But I do think it will give it more power for the people who are like, I can't do these things with Siri. So there's like an answer there. And I think Apple's whole move is to say like, this isn't a mainstream product yet. Right. So we're going to satisfy these power users and then catch up for everybody else.
Yeah. Like I feel like most people I know who use Siri are just like set alarm.
Yeah. Or they're like set a timer. And then
second timer. But okay, so like just to wrap this up. So yeah. Google has a search mentality. They don't make you figure out what the keywords are. You just ask for it and Google figures out what you want, right? Mm-hmm. Alexa has a like whoever like claims the hot word first gets it mentality. And so there's a million skills and you have to say these awkward things to make them happen. So Apple can't pull off what Google wants to do. And it doesn't want to have the mess that Alexa is. And so their solution is just set it up yourself.
Yeah. I will say I don't know which one is best. But here's what's interesting to me is Google's solutions are often completely opaque. You talk to Google.
That's fair.
The cloud infrastructure has a lot of thoughts for you and it delivers some result out of a black box. You don't know what it's going to be. Hopefully it's the right one. With Alexa, it's a little bit more straightforward because it's like, you're like, Alexa, talk to something else, which will do something else and have this result. Apple is like, you're going to just set it up. So there's more transparency with Apple, which is like kind of vibes the company's ethos, but it's just more complicated. All right. So that's Siri. You want? Is there anything else with notifications? I bet you have a lot of thoughts about notifications.
I mean, we got to see it. We got to try it. But like those are the things I mentioned already are like the two big things, right? It's grouped and it's managing them directly from the thing. Like that's like the bare minimum that I expect from a mobile platform right now. I don't think it's as advanced as what you can do on Android, but it's richer than what you can do on Android. And like on the watch, you can like get like rich notifications that like have got stuff in them.
Yeah.
We could get the watch out of the way. I think the most important thing on the watch is that you can load web pages on it now.
Yeah, wait, why? Like, I was doing something else when they announced this, and I'm like, I clearly heard that wrong.
No, the watch. So we didn't talk about with iOS is the time well spent stuff. So they're introducing all this stuff to iOS where it's, you know, put limits on your app usage, tells you what you're doing when. If you've used Instagram for too long, it'll say you've got 10 minutes left, time to move on.
But it's just like a little warning, right?
Yeah,
it's
I will never heed that.
You use Instagram for a while, but then you just hit a button and ignore it.
Right, so on Android P, there's no button to ignore it.
Right.
You have to, like, go.
It just, like, locks you out.
Yeah, that's like, awesome.
I'm not into it. No.
I love it.
I'm literally getting anxiety right now thinking of getting locked out of Instagram. No.
That's why it's there. And then with iOS. So both Android and iOS are like, we've got to manage your time with the phone. We've got to calm this down. And then the watch demo was just the opposite of that thing, right?
Yeah.
Like Kevin Lynch came out. He introduced a watch designer. She got on an exercise bike. Was like, the watch is automatically detected that I'm exercising. It's linked up to the bike. She started walkie-talking
someone.
She's like,
I'm going to complete my rings today.
Yeah, she's like, I got to get these rings. She's like looking furious. She's like, I'm talking to someone. They're sending me a menu. I'm loading the menu on a embedded WebKit browser. It's like, no, this is the opposite. This is crazy. There was a notification on her watch, I swear to God, that said, remember to do yoga today to be 10% happier. That is insane.
Oh my gosh.
Like, there's like the phone where it's like, you got to stop using the phone. And then there's the watch, which is like, are you the most frenetic person in the world? The watch is for you. But I will say, they've circled all the way back around to the watch they wanted to put out in 2014. When U2 was there and they built this thing, they added the feature back. So they announced walkie-talkie at that time. They never shipped it. They added it back. They were like, the watch will do everything. Now they've got a cellular-capable watch, and they're adding more computer-like features to it. Right? That's about it?
Yeah.
But it still doesn't have any apps.
There's a bunch of health stuff that, you know, is like, you can compete now and blah, 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 blah. That's all fine. I don't exercise, and so it doesn't appeal to me, I guess. The walkie-talkie thing is clever because it's basically just FaceTime. You literally set up a call, and then it's pushed to talk, which is kind of funny. But yeah, I this was not a huge year for the watch. They definitely have stopped talking about third-party apps altogether. They're just done worrying about that.
I feel like that's okay. I have never used a single app on the watch that made me happy
in any way.
Yeah, no, mine broke.
I've never seen you wear one. No. Dieter, are you wearing yours right now?
Not at the present moment, but I have been when I use the iPhone. I have been using the iPhone for the last month or so.
I will say this stuff got me to reconsider wearing it. Yeah.
There's two things. The podcast app is coming to the watch, mm-hmm. and third-party audio apps will be able to work in the background. So Overcast will be able to make a new version if they want to that works on the watch. Audible will be able to make a version that works on the watch. Because that was a huge problem, is like no third-party app could do audio.
Yeah.
They're not going to let those apps stream, but they will be able to, like, you know, load up stuff on the watch and let you play it when you go for a run.
Definitely what that watch demo needed was a podcast playing at 2x speed while she frenetically loaded web pages, walkie-talkie.
For sure.
Like, pedaled furiously. They've got to figure it. Okay, let's talk about it. Because it's so real. Memoji.
Yes.
It's so real. There's already, like,
I'm so excited.
Memoji me. So Apple did Animoji with the iPhone X when it came out. Then they were like, we've added some new Animojis. Animoji famously could not wink or stick their tongue out. iOS 10, they can do those things. But now you can capture your face and be a cartoon that yells at people.
It's like Bitmoji, but mapped to your face.
Yeah.
Exactly that.
Yeah.
And I feel bad for Bitmoji because I'm like, Bitmoji, if you had just done this, you would have been ahead of the game.
But we were talking about this. The thing about Bitmoji that's great is you make an avatar, and then, like, there's a team at Bitmoji that's like, we're gonna make memes for you.
Yes, but it's so much more awesome if I can just be my avatar.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's funny to send the memes, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
but you can also always just make stickers. Like Bitmoji could do the stickers and do this.
That's true.
And they could do it in Snapchat. Like Snapchat has this capability because they do the lenses. So it's like, oh, just make a lens of my face.
Oh man, they missed this boat.
Yeah. Like it literally, I just want to know what that office is like right now.
The Snapchat office?
Yeah, with Bitmoji. Well, Bitmoji's in Canada, but I want to know what's going on in Canada right now.
I mean, they're on the phone to Evan Spiegel. I'm like, Evan, you got rocked. And Evan's like, I'm busy reinventing the interface again.
I want to know. But yeah.
Here's my question. Animoji, I was high on. They were everywhere for a hot minute. Then they disappeared. I haven't seen anybody use an Animoji for anything. Do you think Memoji is going to be on a similar trajectory?
I don't think so.
No, why?
I just think because it's yourself. Like, it gets old to use the dragon emoji or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Being yourself is, Bitmoji hasn't died yet. It's you.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think that can get old.
I could be wrong about this, but I think, so in the camera app, they now have this star button. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not in the camera app. In the, like, the camera pop. One of the important things in iOS 12 is that AR is built into the platform at like a platform level. So the same way any app can like call, ask for the camera and then the camera interface pops up. Mm-hmm. Now any app can ask for AR and the AR interface will pop up and there's an AR camera interface, which I think means any app will be able to be like, hey, bring up the camera. And then you'll be able to hit that star button and use your Memoji on your head. And so I think it's not what we really want, which is just the floating Memoji head. You know, you got to like export that shit from iMessage and that's super annoying. So they didn't do that. I don't know why they didn't just make an app. They really still should. But I think you'll be able to, like, throw Memoji on anything that uses, like, the built-in, like, pull-up-the-camera app thing.
Yeah, I don't know why. I just feel like Memoji is going to be really good for celebrities ranting about stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, in Instagram. Ooh. They're just going to, like, they don't want to use their real face. So they're just going to be like, this is me, and this is my rant.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I just feel like that's going to be the go-to for Memoji is the rant.
And they've got the filters for the camera now, like the built-in like crayon filter.
Yeah, like, it got so extra up there. I was like, what is Apple doing?
Wait, those filters felt like the old school like photo booth filters. Yeah. Like, those have been on the Mac for like a decade, well, and they still look exactly the same.
And when they pulled it up with the group FaceTime and everyone was wearing their Memoji or whatever, I was just like, no.
Yeah.
This is too much.
It's no, but it's exactly what I want.
Oh my gosh.
When I group FaceTime, it took them a decade straight up. Yep. Now it's here.
Yeah.
They used to have group iChat. These are like old Mac features coming to the phone because it's photo booth effects and group iChat now on your iPhone.
Do y'all think that's going to kill House Party or whatever?
I think because House Party has a user base. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know why they would move. House Party has an Android version. It's like a whole thing, right?
Yeah.
But it's going to make my parents involved.
Yeah, no, it's great for
I can't
family,
wait till
so.
Max gets her own phone. Oh, and then she disaster. Can be part of the group FaceTime.
My parents already feel left out when my sister is FaceTiming with my kid.
Yeah,
They'll text me and I'll be like, sorry, my sister's on. And they're like, oh, call us next. And now they can just roll in. And they're like, oh, you didn't call us first. But now it's like,
the
it's
whole
a thing.
Fam.
It's a thing. It's going to be a thing.
That's great.
It's going to be super great. I'm really excited about it. I am. Families are great. You should have one. Last few things here on iOS, or should we just move on to...
Can we just mention that CarPlay is now with Google Maps, which is like the best thing. That's the best news ever.
I actually put that second because it's my favorite feature.
It's amazing. That's the biggest complaint I ever had with CarPlay. Is I was like, all I want is Google Maps or Waze, but for the same reason. Yeah. I want Google's mapping.
Yeah.
And now
it's there.
It's there.
You know they gave up too. They were like, we thought we could get people to use these Apple Maps, and everyone hates it.
It really felt like a huge concession.
Eddie Key got lost in his Ferrari. He's like, guys, I was just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I felt kind of bad for Apple because I was like, they totally didn't want to have to do this. They had to.
Whenever you talk to anybody from Apple about it, they'd be like, yeah, so you could like do Waze. And it's like, and also Google Maps. Yeah, but Waze. It's like, did you know Waze is owned by Google? you're not getting around it.
All right, so here's the big news. That's the phone. The phone's interesting. Not a lot with the phone. Some stuff with the phone. Oh, they increased the performance, which is good. I would say my iPhone X is hitting that point. It's like midway through. And I'm like, oh, this is getting a little clunky.
Already.
You're 10?
My 10.
That's knee lie.
That's crazy.
I'm on a 6S.
Yeah. Your shit's right way slower.
It's hell over here. I'm waiting till fall when I will buy the iPhone X.
Well, it'll be the 11. Or are you going to buy the 10?
I'm going to buy the 10 because it'll drop in price, ideally.
I got you. Yeah. From to $900?
At least it's not
that. So hang on. They're going to do an iPhone 9, right?
Yeah.
And then what?
No, who would want a 9?
No, they'll never do a 9. You're saying they'll update the 8 to the 9? No, they're going to drop the 10 to replace the 8. They'll probably make the 8 even cheaper, and they'll do like an 11. X2.
Okay.
XS.
It's going like Final Fantasy numbers.
Extra. Yeah. It's out of control. Okay, let's talk about the Mac. So the Mac is a big deal with this marzipan thing. Dieter, tell us what's happening.
Okay, so first of all, dark mode, everyone's very excited, got lots of cheers. They did some stuff in the Finder. They like made the get info window a pane in the Finder. Fine. They pretended like CoverFlow never existed, and they replaced it with a new view called Gallery View. They added stacks to the desktop for you, Neli, to organize your messy-ass desktop.
My desktop is
fine. All that's your desktop is awful. It's just the worst. It's the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. So there was all that. Like, here's all the stuff. And throughout the keynote, they're like, oh, we're, you know, all these apps that came to the iPad, they're also coming to the Mac. We're bringing the Stocks app and the Voice Memos app and Apple News and the Mac Store is getting an update. And I was looking at these apps and I'm like, huh, these all look just like the iPad apps. And they're like, guess what? We're doing a thing. So they won't give it a name. We know it's codenamed Marzipan, but Apple won't say so. They won't say that it's porting apps because they don't think it's that, because they don't want people to think it's just iPad apps copied over to the Mac. So we have nothing to call this thing. But it's basically, you can take an iOS app and a bunch of the stuff that you... Okay, let me start over. Are you ready? It's complicated. Haim wrote a really good piece. I threw in some thoughts in there.
That piece was super helpful. Everyone should read that piece.
Yeah.
So iOS and the Mac are both like Unix platforms, right? Mm-hmm. But then you have to build apps on top of it, and you have to like create a user interface. And the way that you create a user interface on the Mac is traditionally this thing called AppKit. So that gives you your sidebars and your scroll bars and your menus and all the stuff. And then on iOS, it's this thing called UIKit, which gives you, you know, the slide over things and the, you know, tabs on the bottom and scrolling and touch buttons and blah, blah, blah. Right. So what they're doing is they are saying, if you make an iOS app, you can use UIKit to turn it into a Mac app, and then it'll work on the Mac, and that'll let you have resizable windows and scrolling and clicking and right clicking and like the file view edit menu and all that stuff. But they're not letting developers play around with it, even though a bunch of developers have already figured out how to mess with it until next year. And instead, Apple is eating its own dog food by coding some of its own apps with this new thing right now.
Yeah. I got to say that the people who make the Stocks app at Apple, this is as much public recognition as they have ever gotten in their entire life. First of all, it's the first update to the Stocks app ever. It's just straight up. And then it has like a bunch of new features, has Apple News integration. You just know the Stocks app is like Tim Cook's favorite app. And like every you know, they have like a long, Apple famously has a long weekly senior leadership meeting. And you know, at the bottom of his agenda is like always like Stocks question mark, and they just never get to it. And he's
like, if we have time,
he's like, it's like supply chain, future of the business, AR, privacy concerns, merging our platforms, and like 50 more things, Stocks. And they're like, Steve, we don't have time for this. Steve, Tim, we don't have time for this. Anyway, so I looked at the Home app, and it has like absolutely iOS sliders in it. Like set timers and things, like that rolling cylindrical thing. So there's iOS elements here, right?
Oh, the Home app in particular, I played around with it a little bit. It did a better job of resizing the window than Apple News, which I'll get to in a second. But you just want to touch those buttons because they just look like big old buttons that you touch with your finger.
Yeah.
If it's going to be a Mac app, it should have a drop down. It should have keyboard shortcuts. It should, you know, have automator actions, all the stuff that makes a Mac app, only like a portion of that is here.
Do we expect that to change? Like, is this because it's like pre-release of this Marzipan stuff? They haven't actually figured it out? Or is this the hellish future we have to look forward to?
So I have two answers to that. One, I do expect it to change a little bit. So if you like, I went to like look at the you know, view menu, and there were some like keyboard shortcuts there, but it's clear they could have just added more. So they haven't done all the work that I think they could do to make these feel more Mac-like. So that's one. Two, this is the hell's future you have to look forward to, where it feels more like iOS apps. Like, for example, when I was resizing the Apple News app, it would like the window contents would take a second longer than I expected to like reform to the window size. And it was really clear that it was using a different window set of layout tools. There was like a little spinner that showed up for half a second.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's not good.
It's not great. No.
But they're a year away. It's like hard to judge them on that.
Yeah. They got a year. And I think so they can do more to make it feel more Mac-like. But my second answer to that question is, even if they don't, even if this is what we get, fine. Yes. Great. Do it. Love it. Awesome.
So having
used Android apps on Chrome OS, having cute little mobile apps on your desktop is the best.
Except you can't touch them.
It's awesome. Except you can't touch them.
So here's my question. So Twitter famously killed its desktop client like 3 weeks ago. Right?
Yep.
How long was I out?
It's like a long time.
There's 2 months of tech news that just didn't happen.
Really, they killed it like 5 years ago.
Right. So this is, not to float a conspiracy theory here, but if you're Twitter, you know this thing is coming because you're on good grace with Apple. You're like, let's kill this Mac app now. This is going to roll out. And then we'll just port the Twitter iOS app to the Mac.
Yeah.
And that's the move for everybody.
Yeah. So a bunch of companies don't want to make Mac apps anymore, I don't think. But they do want to keep making iPhone apps and iPad apps. And so a bunch of companies are going to be like, whatever, we'll just port over the iOS app.
So does this is like dangerous, right? There's like a deep danger here that eventually there will be no Mac apps.
Right. But which danger is more likely? That there'll be no Mac apps and everyone's going to make iOS apps and that'll be a hellish future, or that everyone's going to stop using Mac apps altogether because they're all just using Electron apps.
Right.
Electron apps are way more likely right now.
If you are coming into the Vergecast cold, we've talked about Electron for the last few weeks because it's basically the set of web technologies that, like Slack, if you use Slack on a Mac, is basically a web browser showing you a web view of Slack with a whole bunch of other stuff behind it. So that is
Would you rather have basically Slack's iPad app but on the Mac, or Slack's web browser-based app, which is more full-featured but also like a huge RAM hog? And you know what? I think I'd rather have the iOS version.
Yeah,
on my Mac.
So Walt Mossberg, our good friend, just won an award for mentoring young journalists, by the way, Livingston Award. But Walt tweeted, "This is pure speculation, but he's like, this is a step towards what I want, which is an iOS laptop." Is this that step?
Yeah. So there's two possible futures that I see. One is
there's always two futures with you, man.
I know. I'm sorry. It's a step towards ARM-based Macs.
Yeah.
Because if you've got a bunch of iOS apps that work just fine on ARM processors on the iPad, then you put it on a Mac, but then they could release an ARM-based Mac. They could theoretically make a clamshell iOS device that has a touchpad and a mouse, because all these apps would support it because they've been made for the Mac. I don't know.
That
they're going to do that, but I don't know.
I mean, I think that at some point that everybody has to confront the idea. The iPad Pro is like fun to use. I've been using one a lot. It's really fun to load up Lightroom and then like edit a photo with a pen. That's just a good time. I will say I'm older, but like clearly very much
like
a dad.
The coloring books.
My definition of a good time has radically changed, but it's a good time. But every other computing thing I want to do, I'm like, I just need a computer, right? So there's something in the middle with the iPad that they're not getting right.
The iPad needs a trackpad. I'm just going there. iPad.
Yeah.
I'm not reaching up to scroll down every web page. Give me something.
But so they were talking to Lauren Good. She's at Wired now. She interviewed Craig Federighi. Great interview. Go read it. Very light on details. Lots of dancing because they don't know. It's a year out, so they're not going
to
do a detail.
Yeah, and I talked to her, by the way. Light on details, not through any fault of hers. Like, they just didn't give her...
Yeah, it's just... Flaming anybody for Apple being vague and fucking weird is not their fault. Guaranteed. but he's like, we're never doing a touchscreen laptop. Which, you know, it's Apple, so like they'll never do it until they do it. But they seem just dead set that the Mac is... They're going to do a touch bar, which is horrible.
Yeah.
This, to me, is the thing that undoes that. Right.
Stefan, who I sit next to now, was using a touchscreen laptop yesterday. And I just watched him for like 4 minutes try to tap something and it not register. And I was just like, dude, that is why Apple's not going to make a touchscreen laptop. And he's like, yeah, it's really bad.
No, it's because he was using some garbage HP.
I don't know what he was doing. All I know is I saw him for a lot. And then he's like listening to the fans on his laptop all the time. I'm like, Stefan, what's going on over here, man? Well, you doing okay?
This poor dude is on like a gaming PC beat. It's like not the right place to go. All right. So that's the Mac. I mean, I feel like we talk about it forever, but like that's a big deal. I think we're going to see that play out a lot, basically, right? Like over the next year, more and more hand-wringing about the future of the Mac is going to come because the developers are going to start moving their iOS apps, and they're going to hit their limits. They're going to say, well, I just need a touchscreen to make this work properly. And then a year from now, the apps are actually going to be here. And we're all going to realize, like, oh, that moment when, like, you had a really beautiful sort of mid-level Mac app and it did one thing really great is gone.
This makes me so nervous because some of the smaller apps I've tested on the iPad will just port over their iPhone app, and mm-hmm. it's the worst experience ever. And I'm just so scared of reliving that, where they just, like, enlarge the thing.
Yeah.
It looks blown up and terrible. And they're just like, oh, we'll put a scroll bar here or whatever they're going to do.
Yeah.
And that is going to be bad if they do that. It'll be the smaller developers, probably.
Yeah, the ones who don't have recent. And like, now we can get all the Mac people, too.
Yeah.
It's going to be a thing. Circuit Breaker team is about to have a great time with all the configuration apps of, like, all these IoT devices.
Yep.
It took Philips, like, 15 years to update the Hue app. I cannot wait for their Mac app to control Hue lights. It's going to be a thing.
God.
All right, I'm going to read this ad. Oh, we should talk about Atmos on the Apple TV.
It exists. The end.
They did it. They told me they were going to do it, and then they did it. The end.
Everyone was very happy for you.
I was very to be in a position where the richest company on earth announces a feature and strangers on Twitter say congratulations to me is like extremely weird. But I'll take it. I'm very excited for it. It's not in the beta. It's not done yet. They haven't rolled it out. There's no content until the fall, so it's not here yet. I am dying to know how they solved the Siri Atmos problem, because that was the holdup, as far as I know.
Can I ask what the Siri Atmos problem
is? So right now the Apple TV does all of its audio decoding internally. So you send it a Dolby Digital 5.1, you're watching a movie on iTunes in Dolby Digital, it decodes all of that audio and then sends out 5 channels of PCM audio to whatever, right? So it does the surround processing for you. And the reason it does that is so that when you hold down the button and call Siri, it can put the Siri audio and responses into the audio stream. That's like very complicated. They have to put Siri into the audio. They can't just pass, you know, your TV show or your movie or whatever straight to your soundbar. They have to decode the audio, mix Siri into it. Atmos is object-based, so they can't just pick 5 channels of audio and put Siri wherever they want. They have to make Siri an object in the Atmos stream. So that's like a big, complicated, how did you solve this problem? No one's ever solved it well. Who knows? I'm very curious to hear how they did it.
So Siri could just, like, appear at some corner of your room.
That would be the dream, right? Like, Siri's, like, swirling around you. But I'm very excited for that. That is true that the Apple TV now is the best streamer if you want Dolby Vision and Dolby Atmos. The Chromecast can do it, and I do it all the time on my Chromecast, and it is the most annoying experience in the world. This episode of The Vergecast brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Hiring is challenging, but if there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart, a place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates, that place is ZipRecruiter.com/Verge. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. Their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply for your job. So as applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one, spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post in ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. With results like that, it's no wonder ZipRecruiter is the highest-rated hiring site in America. Right now, Vergecast listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Verge. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Verge, V-E-R-G-E. Once more, that is ZipRecruiter.com/Verge. ZipRecruiter says they're the smartest way to hire. It's a tagline. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
All right.
I'm excited to go find a job.
No, I invite you.
Oh, okay.
I post the job and then the robot invites you in a zip. It recruits you. That's not their tagline. All right. There's breaking essential news. Ashley, break the news.
Essential announced on Twitter that its second module is a hi-fi headphone jack.
What up? All my dreams are
coming
true.
Bringing back the headphone jack as a mod.
Yeah.
No.
That's what you want.
What?
They're
going to
support ESS Saber. It's got an ESS Saber DAC. It's a hardware MQA rendering.
These are just,
and it's crafted
you're
with
saying
machine
whatever goddamn
titanium.
Letters you want. Here's what you need to know. They partnered with Tidal, the failed phone company, and the extremely confusingly is it failed music service have brought you the ultimate in dongles.
Exclusive to Sprint.
So it's a magnet that sticks to your phone.
Yeah.
That is a headphone.
Yeah, that's how their accessory thing works. It's a magnet.
Gosh.
Ashley, I'm assigning a story on this podcast right now. Last week on this podcast, I laid out my conspiracy theory that Apple won't let anybody make headphone jack accessories for the iPhone.
Oh, yeah. I know. I heard this conspiracy theory. Yeah. And yeah, I believe that.
All right.
I've been trying.
Get in it.
I've been trying to hunt this down. You know I have been.
But I hear the distaste, the disdain in your voice for this headphone magnet.
Perfect for the fridge.
Perfect for the fridge. Now you can add a headphone jack to anything made of metal. Why would anybody... Dieter, Essential's over, right? Like, why are they even trying?
I mean, they're not making a second phone, right? That's what we're thinking. But they still want to get that home thing done. I don't know, man. They want to do for the smart home what Sonos is doing for audio. They want to be the neutral translator.
Are you just segueing into the real story that you covered?
No, I'm just saying that there's a parallel there, but like Sonos is doing it and Essential is promising that someday maybe it will do it.
Yeah. You're the last person I know using an Essential phone, so I just wanted to hear your emotions.
I mean, I do have
he sounds despondent,
right?
Yeah, if you ask me.
Let's see if we can figure out what Dieter's feeling. Despair. All right, Dieter, you had the big product exclusive on the new Sonos Beam. What's going on with this thing?
Yeah. So it's a sound bar that has Alexa, which seems pretty straightforward. But what's clever about it is they decided to finally make the switch away from optical audio to HDMI for audio input, mm-hmm. Which lets them, if you plug it into a TV, it means the TV should automatically recognize it and port all your audio over to the soundbar. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. You got to configure it. And sometimes you don't want to give up an HDMI port. So they are shipping a dongle that has optical audio to HDMI. But as a smart speaker, as an Alexa speaker, it's pretty good, right? It does all the Alexa stuff, and it recognizes my voice pretty well. It's a small soundbar. It's $400, which is like important because I think it's going to help them expand their market. And it's sort of meant for, I don't know, name your demographic, urban hipsters, something, something.
Yeah.
It's small. It's cute. It's a baguette. It's like a baguette.
Here's what I think it's for. Here's my take.
Okay.
I think lots of people have smart TVs, and they just use Netflix on their smart TVs. They don't have a box. Smart TVs sound horrible. And Sonos is like, you want an Alexa, just put this under your smart TV, plug it in with one cable. It'll just work. Your TV will sound good. And then you get this, like, Alexa streaming speaker. And now, when you listen to that one Jay-Z song where he's like, Frank Sinatra on my Sono, you'll be like, I have one of those.
Wait, I've been bewildered by this. So because there's only one HDMI port, you cannot use this with a Roku and Apple TV.
No, you'd plug those into the TV.
That's wrong.
You can?
Yeah, okay. You'd plug it in. Yeah, you plug everything into the TV.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's the HDMI audio return channel. And the return means that the TV does audio out through HDMI to the soundbar.
Okay, got it.
So you plug everything into the TV, and then you use one of the HDMI ports to send audio down to the soundbar. And then because it's hooked up over HDMI, it can use HDMI CEC to turn the TV on and off. And if you happen to have a Fire TV, you can use Alexa to like control the Fire TV. And later on, when you have a Chromecast, you can use Google Assistant to control a Chromecast. So
is Google Assistant ever coming to Sonos? We've been saying that shit for a year.
They said this year. They said it's coming this year.
Okay.
That's all I got. The pitch here is you want an Alexa in your living room, but you don't want another freaking speaker. And you definitely want a soundbar because your TV sounds like garbage, but you don't want a big honking one. So get this cute little soundbar. It sounds better than an Echo. It's maybe comparable to a HomePod. I don't know. Well, I don't know. I'm not going to get into too many comparisons because I haven't been able to list them. But I have a guess of what the comparison is going to be like. But you get a really good speaker for music in your room. You get a smart speaker in your living room without having to have another thing plugged in somewhere. And you get better sound from your TV. $400, and it's small and cute. That's the idea.
And most TVs will work with it, right? That's what the only thing I was wondering about.
Yeah, I think most new TVs. If you have like a 15-year-old like plasma that's like generating heat in your apartment.
This feels targeted at me.
Do you have a 15-year-old plasma in your apartment?
I have a 3D TV.
Do you really?
No.
Wow. Well, I have a 3D TV. I've only ever watched one thing.
My dad has a 3D TV.
Does he have the Gravity Blu-ray? Because it is worth it. It's
I don't know what he's doing. I don't ask.
I'm just saying, a great present is the Gravity Blu-ray because it's in 3D. You wear the glasses as a family.
Yeah.
Just throwing it out
I'm not
there.
Even going to respond to this.
It just seems fine. It seems like this is a product Sonos should have made with the Playbase they put out last year.
Yeah, the fact that the Playbase doesn't have Alexa is still just dumb.
So, but this is like the first product.
A lot of people love it. Walt has a play. Walt Mossberg has a play bass. Producer Felicia Shivakumar has a play bass. They love it. It sounds great. It's got a lot of bass. It's really, really good. You can just buy an Echo Dot and everything works the same. But I don't know. It takes them 2 years to make one of these speakers. At least the Sonos Beam was 2 years in development. It's really dumb to me that they didn't find a way to cram Alexa onto the play bass.
Yeah.
Because it just came out.
But this is the first product from the new CEO. The new CEO is trying to like make the company go faster. Here's what I think is super interesting. Right before they announced this, they announced that they are partnering with a bunch of AV receiver manufacturers so that their Sonos stuff can like turn those on and off by themselves. So more things can be Sonos-like. And then today, IKEA like put out a teaser that they're going to make their own Sonos speakers, which are even cheaper than the $150 Play One. So they're just getting bigger. Like, I think Sonos wants you to have Sonos speakers in your house. Their pitch, I think, is good. So if you are right now, if you're like, when you buy one of these things, you have to be an Alexa person or you have to be a Google person. And that, you know, it's a lot. It's a lot to be like, I bet that Amazon's going to win and I've installed all this stuff in my house. But if you buy all Sonos stuff and like 5 years down the road, you're like, oh man, Google won. You like switch it over.
Yeah,
I think it's very
well. And Sonos also works with AirPlay 2, and I think it does like room syncing. So like you set up Sonos rooms, and then AirPlay 2 can see them.
Man, I got doubts.
Yeah, well, I mean, we got to try it, right? But it also does clever shit. Like when you send a song over AirPlay 2, it also sends the name of the song, and so you can start a thing with AirPlay 2, and then you can ask Alexa what's playing, and then Alexa will tell you what's playing because it knows because Sonos knows. Sonos tells Alexa. And then you can play pause or whatever. So like normally if like you're doing AirPlay stuff, you got to find the person with the phone and ask them to do something, change it, right? Change the volume, change the song, whatever. But when you send it to a Sonos speaker, you can like start an AirPlay 2 song and then you can go Alexa next track and it'll jump over to the next track, even though you started it on an AirPlay 2. So they do a pretty good job of like translating between all these services.
Yeah. At the end of the day, it's a soundbar for $400. Like, Sonos is very good at making its announcements seem huge. Just like commend them for that. Like, they're an important company people care about. But like, they made one more Sonos speaker. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I think a lot of people are going to buy this thing, which is their goal. But in terms of like pushing the state of the art forward.
What is Sonos's game with opening up the ability to connect other speakers to Sonos? Because this is very surprising to me. Right? It seemed like Sonos's business was, we sell you a bunch of extremely expensive speakers and they all work together.
Yeah.
And now they're saying, I mean, it's great if you can connect cheaper speakers.
I think their game ultimately is like, you know, you're going to, so I think I said this on the show like a week ago, 2 weeks ago, time is relative. It's a construct. The hosts are alive. I think Sonos optimistically believes every single one of its customers is going to get richer and have a bigger house over time. So you buy one, and then you're going to be successful.
Oh my god!
You got that Sonos
investing in your future,
and then you're going to have a room with two. You're going to have a house with two rooms, and you're like, I should buy another Sonos speaker. And then you're going to have a house with like five rooms.
38% of Sonos customers end up buying another Sonos speaker,
right? Because they were successful. Because they had the good sense to buy a Sonos speaker. People who don't buy a Sonos speaker, they fail in life. Smaller houses.
This should be.
I don't think this is their
pitch.
You
want me to break your spirit?
Yeah.
They said this on stage. Fortunately, they didn't try and sell me on this concept when I went down to their offices in beautiful Santa Barbara, where I'm going to retire someday. Sonos believes that it is the best platform for the... you ready?
Yeah.
This is what they call it.
Oh, God.
Everyone prepared? For the Sonic Internet.
The Sonic Internet?
Yeah.
Where? What is the Sonic Internet? Is that literally all sound?
The Internet of Sounds. It's the newest, hottest internet.
I mean,
look, Jake, just buy a sound speaker and then think about how to get yourself into a bigger house. That's their business model.
What if they're right? What if this has all been a Sonic Internet? Like, is this a Sonic Internet?
Yes, dude.
Oh, my God.
We're on the Sonic Internet right
this
now.
This is why Sonos makes so much money.
Yeah.
They have these.
It's all look, hidden, this, Jake, right
here's
now.
Here's what I'm saying. You buy a Sonos speaker. You're just a regular guy. And you open that app and you're like, oh man, I wish I could use some of this multi-room functionality. And you're like, I gotta work harder. I gotta hustle. I gotta drive. And then you're like, I need two rooms. and then like you're motivated. You're listening to Gary Vaynerchuk tapes every morning. Mm. You're like on that boosted board. Suddenly you got 15 rooms in your house and you're like, it's all because I just wanted multi-room streaming capability. Sonos, thank you for the kick in the ass I needed to be the best Jake I could be.
Sonos is the ultimate peddler of capitalism.
Yes, that's right. So Adam Smith was like, one day there'll be a wireless speaker company that really takes my theories to the max. That's
they'll,
how he talked.
They'll get it.
He was a weird Victorian.
I mean, I'm glad Sonos can finally bring this to reality. And
here's the big problem for Sonos. They're going to have an IPO pretty soon.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, they're going to have to start giving quarterly reports. And Sonos likes to talk about a 10-year time span, not a three-month time span. Mm-hmm. And so when they start getting pressure from investors to start doing stuff more quickly, when what they really want to do is make a speaker that you'll buy and use for 10 years, that's going to be rough for them.
The Sonos subscription service of some kind is coming. That recurring revenue thing where they charge you $10 a month for something to happen on the Sonic internet.
And especially if they're opening this up to third-party speakers, there's no way there's not.
Well, then they get licensing revenue. That's a good recurring revenue stream, right? Like IKEA sells so many speakers a month. They all have Sonos technology that's like, $3 of patent licensing fees or whatever the hell it is. Okay. One more thing and then we got to read a break and then you are in charge of the gadget segment, my friend. Okay. Amazon's Fire TV Cube is an Echo Stream Box universal remote in one. Here's what this is. This is an all-black cube with two very smart things in it. It's a combination of a Fire TV Stream Box and an Echo. Lights up. Listen to it. All four sides of this cube have an IR blaster to control your cable box.
And there's an IR extender, too, if you want it.
This is a hellish idea.
This is a great
hellish idea.
I thought this, dude, this you were thing going to be more everything. Excited about it this than everything. Atmos. I thought this was like, isn't this your dream product?
This is my nightmare.
There
you
are
have to move away
at,
from this garbage
least
standard.
Five IR blasters by my count.
Yeah, there's five. There's one on each side. I don't want to put one on the top and the bottom too.
This is incredible. What can't you do with this?
Infrared
the channel
is great.
It's reliable.
Sort of credibility.
It works.
Yeah. No, it's infrared is fine for things that don't require state. So you're like volume up, and volume will just go up. But you can't be like volume 50%, which I don't know why you do, but you can't because it IR will never know what's happening. So that means you definitely can't say something like change the channel to HBO and it will like
yes, you can.
Not to a cable box. It will
fail. It understands the cable box and it'll send the channel number to the cable box.
There's a graveyard of idiots who have tried this before with this exact technology. Like Google TV, Mark Whitten, who is a lovely man, I don't mean to denigrate him, literally tweeted me, I've been arguing with you about this since 2013, because he was in charge of the Xbox One, and I was like, the fuck are these IR blasters? He's like, I need to have them, but one day, everyone will understand the Xbox One is the ultimate TV device for living room, and I was like, I don't think so, I think your IR blaster is going to fail and people are going to turn off, and now it doesn't work at Microsoft anymore, and I'm just saying that's maybe not 100% what happened there, but love you, Mark. Okay. I'm done talking about
the investors. Wait, so Sonos thinks cable boxes are dead, and Amazon is like, nah, like we think people still have them.
Yeah, I think most people just buy the smart TV. By the way, I don't mean to like harsh on Mark. I'm just telling jokes. Mark's a good guy. He actually used to work at Sonos. He was there's a thing. He went from Microsoft Sonos. Good, smart guy. Xbox One, great. Preferred to the PS4.
You're wrong about that.
Well, I know. Now I'm just thinking about all of the hate that's going to flow my way because I hate the IR Blaster, and I love the Xbox. Anyway, I think stream boxes are coming to an end because smart TVs are pretty good. So you can just buy one and not screw with any other stuff and just like use Netflix. Most people just watch the Netflix. They all have Netflix. A lot of them have Netflix buttons on the remote. So you buy the Sonos, you plug it in, that same remote will control the volume of your Sonos. You get Alexa, you get, driven to be a capitalist murderer because you want more rooms.
Jake.
Why me?
Jake. But I think Amazon rightly sees that lots of people have a cable box. They want their Fire TV products are very popular. They have an old TV. They can just put all this stuff in there and then promise that you can say, Alexa, change the channel, and maybe it will do it. And that maybe is just very important because it never works.
I mean, if they can pull it off, this Echo box, what is it called? Fire TV box?
Yeah.
Fire TV Cube.
Fire Cube.
The Cube. It does literally everything you could want in your living room except YouTube.
Yeah.
Womp womp.
Do you ever need to send money internationally, Jake?
He's a capitalist.
I mean,
of course he does.
Every day.
Yeah, from many rooms in your Sonos-enabled house.
Especially over the Sonic internet.
I want to warn you against using your bank or PayPal, Jake. Sure, they can get money from A to B, but that transfer will cost you more than it should, a lot more. It's the old way. Let me tell you about the new way, TransferWise. TransferWise was founded by two friends, Tavit and Christo, who were frustrated by the bank's bad exchange rate and high fees. They wondered, what if we could bypass the banks entirely? So they built TransferWise, the smartest way to send money internationally. That was 7 years ago. Today, more than 2 million people use TransferWise, people sending money home, business paying suppliers, freelancers getting paid. The list goes on. TransferWise's clever new technology gives you a great exchange rate and a low fee, so it'll put some extra money in your pocket for the more important things, because no one has ever said, it is important that my bank get some extra money, except for presumably the CEO of the bank. But that's not you. Yet. Buy a Sonos. No, I'm kidding. Test it out for free. TransferWise.com/podcast. Download the app. Once again, that's TransferWise.com/podcast. The smartest way to spend money internationally. Jake, every week Paul does a segment.
Yeah. And I believe the segment is called, hey, look at this thing I just found on Verge.com.
That is actually really accurate.
Well, what I wanted to ask is, I actually just found two things that are completely unrelated, but were two of my favorite things this week. And I want to know which one you want to hear about more.
Talk to me.
One of them involves routers with lots of antennas.
Oh, yeah.
Classic. The other involves fake technology that can buy.
Can you combine them? Let's go with fake technology.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're a gamer. You love glowing stuff. Everything on your computer has to glow. Now, here's the predicament. You have 4 RAM slots. You don't have the money to fill up 4 RAM slots.
No.
That's expensive. But it would be so embarrassing if you had 2 glowing sticks of RAM and just 2 empty slots, mm-hmm. right? Enter Gigabyte, which will now sell you 2 fake sticks of RAM that will glow alongside your real sticks of RAM.
Are you serious? What?
This is the future of gaming technology.
It is. So you're playing some games, friend comes over, maybe somebody you're romantically interested in, your room's aglow, and they're like, those empty RAM slots are dark. I'm getting out of here, Buster.
Mm-hmm.
But now, they'd be like, oh, you got 32 gigs in there.
Yeah, I mean, you can bluff how much RAM you've got. Yeah. It's incredible. You can feel faster.
That's important. How much do these cost?
You can't really put a price on fake RAM. oh, God. Wait. No, they cost... So you got to buy them bundled with the real RAM at this point, and it's like $230.
Oh, that's great.
But in the future, they are considering selling the fake RAM entirely on its own. So you can just buy fake RAM.
I'm so into
no
this.
Real RAM.
I'm 100% buying a gaming PC just so I can have fake RAM.
I mean, this is maybe my favorite technology product in a long time.
It's good. It really speaks to where the gaming PC market yes. has been and will stay. I don't know what else to say about that. All right. A little bit more. Let me wrap this up. I wish Paul was here because the actually bigger news in WWDC, this is true, more popular on our site, moved the market more. Just in general, Microsoft bought GitHub for $7.5 billion. Now, if you don't know what GitHub is, it's because you're probably not a developer. GitHub is where open source developers predominantly post all their code to like share and comment on open source projects. Microsoft is a major user of GitHub. You can also obviously have private repositories on GitHub. This is like a big deal. It was a big deal to the point where there are like tons and tons of like GitHub memes about Microsoft. But Paul's not here, and I feel like he's the one to really,
so what
really dive into the psyche
here.
What kind
of surprised me is Microsoft hasn't, I mean, at least as far as I've seen, really detailed what they plan to do with GitHub or even like necessarily promised like we're not going to mess it up. Like,
they've absolutely promised they're not going to mess it up.
Okay.
Without question, right? So, you know, Microsoft is old, hated open source. They want to kill Linux.
Right.
That was Steve Ballmer's Microsoft. The Satya Nadella Microsoft is like—
They love open source.
They're putting out memes like Microsoft hearts Linux, right? Like— They have become a tool vendor. GitHub is an extraordinarily important tool. They did, I will say this, they drew some sort of line between GitHub and LinkedIn where they were like, people on LinkedIn show off their skills and GitHub is where the skills come to. And it was like, please don't talk about LinkedIn in
Microsoft
a positive way.
Didn't screw up LinkedIn. Yes.
Well, no, they connected the acquisitions in a way that I just don't use LinkedIn. Like, it's just not a thing because I'm not out there trying to get more rooms in my Sonos house. Yeah. But they connected the idea that they own LinkedIn, which is where professionals like do their networking, and GitHub is this place where software professionals like literally do their work but also network. And I don't understand that link particularly well, but their whole thing is like, we're going to leave GitHub alone. I think a lot of people are really nervous about this because with Microsoft's ownership comes more scrutiny of their behavior. And there's a lot of weird stuff on GitHub, like the code for like make deepfakes on GitHub. So like, will Microsoft take response? Like, that's a lot. Like, it's a publishing platform, if you think about it that way, and that means, is Microsoft going to care about what's published on there? But I don't think.
I mean, and I've like looked through like leaked code that's sitting on GitHub.
Yeah,
and I assume that Microsoft will be less lenient about that.
Yeah, so it's unclear, but it's a big deal when Paul comes back next week. Next week, 2 weeks. How long is Paul gone for? Whenever Paul comes back from his voyages, I want to have him talk about that. Okay, here's the other one. I want to pull into this. It requires us to trust Facebook to make a claim, which is hard to do at this moment in time. But the New York Times ran a story, a big story that they have been issuing multiple follows on because there's congressional interest in it, saying Facebook gave over 60 device makers inappropriate access to user data, which is a huge claim. Among those device makers, Huawei, ZTE, the Chinese companies that our government is like shutting down because they, sell secrets to the Chinese government, give secrets to the Chinese government. But here's the thing. Facebook is saying, of course we did. And the big example in the Times is true. And I like literally started laughing out loud when I got to this example because I was like, no one ever bought this phone. So it doesn't matter. They're like a BlackBerry 10 phone. When you like load it up, pulled in all this data from Facebook, including data about your friends that they hadn't consented to give. Right. But nobody ever bought a BlackBerry phone. But Facebook's claim is, we couldn't build apps for all the platforms, so we opened the API hooks so these device makers could build their own apps on their platforms, including these like miniature versions of Facebook, which at the time was a huge trend, right? The BlackBerry Hub,
yeah.
We pull in your contacts, your Gmail, your Facebook calendar, one view of all of the things. So and Facebook says, we never sent any, all the data was on the device, no data, and we monitor everybody, so it's fine. If you believe Facebook, then this entire uproar is ridiculous because, I don't know, you can build an app for Twitter and just log into Twitter, and you get all the data from Twitter. It's just building apps. And Facebook said some people can build apps and some people can't, but that's how the apps work. Great. But if you don't believe Facebook, then it's like, okay, Huawei was scraping Facebook the whole time.
The problem is that it just shows how lenient Facebook is with giving this out, right? They do have deals with all these companies, and maybe they are monitoring them. But just the fact that so many companies, so many developers have access to such a huge amount of information. I think that is maybe just the thing. Like, even if nothing wrong happened, we're realizing now just how much data Facebook is giving over to these companies. And even Facebook is saying we might have given too much data to them, right? Because it cut back on how much data it gives to app developers now.
Right. So that was their app developers. Facebook's argument here is, these weren't app developers. These were people who made cell phones. Mm. We couldn't get our app on every one of their platforms. We allowed the platform vendors to build a Facebook experience.
Yeah. I feel like even if we're accepting that that is okay, it's still just bad that there's so much information that is available to them, right? Like, they didn't need to make that much information available to run BlackBerry Hub, did they?
I don't know. I mean, the answer is like if you're what you're trying to build is a cut down version of Facebook, then the future of that is to add more and more features to it. So eventually you just have Facebook again. So, right? And I feel like the real thing we're getting at is reckoning with the size of Facebook's data set is like a weaponizable thing as opposed to several years ago when it was just like, you want access to Facebook. And Dieter, I'm interested for your take on this. If Facebook was open and anyone could have built a Facebook client, a lot of people would have been happier, right? Because right now Facebook is this closed ecosystem.
Yeah.
And there are lots
of... In fact, Facebook said that they were under a ton of pressure to open up and let other people make apps for them.
Right. So a lot...
It wasn't just BlackBerry. Yeah.
So a lot of people previously have said Facebook should open up and become part of the web. And now they're getting all this heat because they opened up in this very selective way. So it feels like the story is too much, but it's only too much if you absolutely believe that Facebook is telling the truth about data sharing.
Well, is Facebook telling the truth? It's does Facebook actually know? So, all right. you can make, anybody can make a Twitter app. Presumably you can get a bunch of information about the people that you follow, you know, even though they haven't consented to share with that app, whatever. So anybody can make a Facebook app, or these particular companies could make a Facebook app. Facebook's like, yeah, they just made an app. And like, when you make an app, you get to get to grab information about the friends. But we know with Cambridge Analytica, they said, yeah, we realized they had this data. We told them to get rid of it. And then they didn't. And so the thing about these other companies making Facebook apps is Facebook is presuming to know what other companies have done with the data, that they stayed on device, blah, blah, blah. And do we actually believe that back then and now Facebook was actually had the access to do the audits to make sure that the user data that they gave another company access to make an app out of was kept safe and secure?
Right. Who knows?
Disclosure, my wife works for Oculus. So
there it is.
Part of Facebook.
That's the one.
There it is.
All right. Yeah. I don't know. That story's out there, but I just wanted to underline the central tension of it, which is it's probably overheated, but to say that, you have to truly believe Facebook. And Facebook has gotten itself into a position where I am absolutely uncomfortable going out on that limb, even though it seems extremely reasonable that they're like, we're not going to build a BlackBerry app. BlackBerry, just go ahead. Here's some API hooks. Okay, one more Facebooky thing.
I just want to say, I think it's funny because it's like, most people probably think of hackers and they're like, oh, I don't want the hackers to hack into Facebook and steal my data. What we're really just talking about now is just Facebook not knowing what they're doing with data. Like having this huge repository of information, being like, we're good.
Yeah.
The hackers can't get to us. But then everyone else.
Just show up and say you're a phone company.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm
cool.
Steve's Phones.
Cambridge Analytica.
I would like deep access here. Okay, this I'm asking you this question.
Yes.
Instagram teasing hour-long video support, which seems crazy to me.
I saw someone say this is like a supposed to be a Snapchat Discover competitor.
Mm-hmm.
No. I just – there is no way I want to watch an hour-long newscast. I don't know.
Yeah.
In Instagram. I was like, is this like supposed to be like Vimeo?
Yeah. Do the influencers want this?
I don't know. I mean, I guess
Jake,
if you're
I
a YouTuber.
That, yes, we do.
Okay. link in bio. I'm sure I'll find out what you're selling.
Right. Buy my merch, yo. Sorry, I don't have any.
That is not true.
But it's not like personal merch.
You do dictate a lot of it, though.
I do capriciously run our merch store, but you don't think anybody will view it.
I mean, that just seems like not what people. I don't think people are. I mean, maybe people are sitting on Instagram and want to watch an hour video. I don't know anyone who would. That seems just like a sentence.
Are they? Are they doing too much with Instagram right now?
I think what's going on is that Facebook has such a bad rap. I think Facebook is big in other countries for sure, but I think in the U.S., which is kind of like what Facebook probably makes most of its money and whatnot, but like. I think in the U.S. people aren't using Facebook. So Facebook's like, hey, we got Instagram here. People like Instagram. Why don't we just stuff all of the features into Instagram and see how that goes? And I just think that is a terrible play. Instagram succeeded because it was just photos. Everyone liked photos.
I really want them to spin out original Instagram and then just have new Instagrams.
That would be great.
When was the last time you posted a photo versus a story?
Okay, I'm back with the grid now.
Oh, you're back in.
Yeah,
really?
because I made my Instagram public and I get a lot of likes. If I'm being honest, guys, I just went through a breakup. I need likes, okay?
I got you.
It's for my ego.
That's do you want to pimp your Instagram on the show right now?
Follow me.
No. Okay. Link in bio. No, but I literally think the stories. Katie Napolis wrote a great piece about this for BuzzFeed. Stories mean that I think way harder about putting shit in the grid.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm not posting every day or anything like that. It's like once a month.
Yeah.
But yeah, back in the day, it was like you posted to the grid all the time.
Especially because
multiple times a week, even. Back in the day.
It was like last year. Stories came out last year.
Feels like ages ago.
I will say this, especially because I know a lot of people want to see my kid, but I don't want to. I know the stories will go away unless people are like really creepy. And I don't think my Instagram followers are that creepy. I'm crazy. But if I put it in the grid, it's like there permanently. Like, I don't want that.
Right.
Like, people just
right.
want to like see, like, Max did a thing today. So it's wild to me that I'd never think about posting like real photos.
That is a kind of
It's got to be like a real thing. It's got to be it's like a real moment that I'm trying to communicate.
Well, when Max grows up, you can tell her that she wasn't real enough for the grid.
Oh, Max has a shout-out Instagram. She has a Finsta. I haven't done anything with it yet.
You need to get that up and running so I can follow it.
I know. It's going to happen. One of our coworkers just had a kid a little bit older than Max, and he and his wife have an email account. They basically are journaling in this email account so that when she's older, she can like open these emails, and it's like, today you walked.
That's wild.
So they're basically like emailing her every day.
Huh.
It's crazy. Okay. That's it.
My parents gave up on my baby scrapbook two days in.
Oh, no.
Yeah. They were like, we tried.
All right. Let me just say one more thing and we can wrap this up. Net neutrality is over on Monday. Well, Pi's order goes into effect.
Yeah.
There's a lot of heat out there in this world. I think you're going to see some protests. The Democrats are running on net neutrality in the midterm elections. So I think just get ready for that coverage to come back to the Vergecast because it's going to, now that it's over, the changes are here.
Only like 100 signatures or something like that away from a vote in the House. So that's right around the corner.
Hey, elections are coming. And the states are passing net neutrality bills. So California just passed one, which is, by the way, prohibited by the order. So if you are into legal drama.
Well, California's going to secede, so.
That'd be cool. All right, that's it. Ashley's here, so I'm going to tell you, you can listen to both seasons of Why'd You Push That Button all at once.
You can listen on your Sonos soundbar.
In any room of your increasingly larger house.
Or over your essential headphone mod through your refrigerator.
Actually, here's what I'll say. Why'd You Push That Button is so good that if you listen to it on anything but an extraordinarily high-quality accessory headphone jack on your doomed custom phone, you're doing it wrong.
Okay. I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Good job.
Elevate.
That sells it.
That's everywhere podcasts are. Converge with Casey Newton is up and running. This week's episode, he interviewed the person who runs spam at Google. A great interview. I gave Casey this compliment last week. I'm going to give it to him again, even though it's not here. Casey's interview style is such that when he's done, I feel like I am best friends with that person.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I almost tweeted at this person at me like, hey, man, cool joke. And I was like, wait, I don't know you at all. But you should listen to Converge.
I admired his passion for spam.
He loves spam. Dude.
He hates it. He loves to hate.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's in a fight
for
his life.
He's a warrior.
He's going to clean up that inbox. there's also other great podcasts out there in the world. Recode Decode with Kara Swisher. Recode Media with Peter Kafka. That stuff is going great. Kara, by the way, she's got that MSNBC show Revolution. They're going to run a whole bunch of code interviews on MSNBC. That's coming up, so check that out. That's it for us.
Can I say everyone should watch Dieter's YouTube show?
You watch Processor.
It's amazing.
It's really good.
It's great, Dieter.
Thank you.
You have an episode coming out the same day this is coming out.
Yeah, we're doing a bonus episode this week.
Yeah.
But WWDC. You want me to tease it?
Yeah.
The WWDC 2018 keynote was the most Google keynote Apple has ever given.
Oh boy. Stuck in the flames.
Yeah. Someone just crashed a car at you. That's your fault. Okay. That was it for the Vergecast this week. I know we went a little long. Thank you for sticking with us. We'll be back next week. Thank you so much for listening. Rock and roll. Paul.
Snip.
This episode of the Vergecast was brought to you by IBM. Technology today has never been smarter, but smart only matters when you put it to good use. Together, we can build a smarter future for all of us. Let's put smart to work. Find out how at IBM.com/smart.